Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the top stories from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Friday, July 3rd, and we are covering the top stories from yesterday, July 2nd, 2026. This is episode number 445, and we have a really packed board today.
We really do. Today, we are talking about a massive controversy brewing in the Android ecosystem, Virginia taking a hard stance on geolocation data, Spain outright blacklisting Palantir, a look at the federated video platform PeerTube, and finally, a nostalgic plea to bring back crappy old web forums.
Let us dive right into that first story, which absolutely dominated the front page yesterday with nearly 1,600 points. The title of the post is Android Developer Verification, Threat Masquerading as Protection, and it links to a fiery blog post from F-Droid.
Fiery is an understatement, Mike. F-Droid is basically calling out Google for a new mandate called Android Developer Verification, or ADV. According to the post, if you are running Android 8 or higher, Google has silently installed a background service with full root privileges. Right now, it is just waiting for an activation signal scheduled for September 30th. Once activated, this service will block you from running any software by developers who have not been centrally approved and verified by Google.
F-Droid literally compares this to a virus or a Trojan horse. They are arguing that Google is using the excuse of malware protection to completely lock down the Android ecosystem and kill sideloading. To be a verified developer, you have to pay a fee, hand over government ID, and agree to terms of service that let Google ban you if you distribute, quote, malware. But F-Droid points out that Google never actually defines what malware is. It could just mean software Google doesn't like, such as ad blockers.
Exactly. And looking at the Hacker News comments, the community is deeply concerned, but also very realistic about the alternatives. A user named Sam Bucciti brought up alternative Linux mobile operating systems like Sailfish OS, Ubuntu Touch, and PeerOS. But then the official GrapheneOS account actually chimed in on the thread to drop some hard truths.
Yeah, the GrapheneOS comment was fascinating. They pointed out that while these alternative Linux OSs exist, they are not really viable for most people because they lack compatibility with the apps people actually need to live their lives, like banking apps, WeChat, or Venmo. Plus, GrapheneOS argued that these alternative operating systems are actually far less secure than the Android open source project because they lack proper app sandboxing and modern exploit protections.
Right. It is a tough spot. If you cannot run your brokerage app or WhatsApp, a phone is basically a brick for most users. But at the same time, giving Google total monopoly control over what can and cannot run on a device you own is a terrifying precedent. We will definitely be keeping an eye on what happens when September 30th rolls around, and this ADV system supposedly goes live in places like Brazil and Singapore.
Moving on to our second story, which got almost 700 points. Virginia has officially banned the sale of geolocation data. Governor Abigail Spanberger signed a law that goes into effect on July 1st, making Virginia the latest state, following Maryland and Oregon, to crack down on data brokers.
This is a huge win for consumer privacy, but the Hacker News comments were quick to point out the loopholes. The law defines a sale as the exchange of personal data for monetary consideration, but a user named Escotten pointed out that the article is a bit misleading. The ban prevents the sale of data that can identify you within 1,750 feet, so companies will likely just sell fuzzy geolocation data instead.
And as another commenter noted, if you collect enough fuzzy data, you can still figure out exactly who someone is and where they work or live. Just average out the data points over a week, and you have a pretty clear map of a person's life. There was also a really interesting legal debate in the thread about enforcement. If a Delaware-incorporated company with zero presence in Virginia sells data that was collected in Virginia, how does the state even enforce that?
It gets complicated fast, but the broader sentiment in the comments was a deep frustration with corporate surveillance. Someone brought up the old "I have nothing to hide" argument, and the community pushed back hard. One commenter beautifully said that corporate stalking has become so normalized that they build inferences about you to attempt to influence your choices, which is fundamentally menacing. It is not just about hiding bad things, it is about preserving your autonomy.
Absolutely, and it shows that people are tired of the coercive tactics where you cannot use a product you bought unless you agree to let them track and sell your location. It will be interesting to see if this state-by-state legislation eventually forces a federal privacy law, because right now it is just a patchwork of different rules.
Speaking of data and surveillance, our third story takes us to Europe.
Spain has ordered a blacklist of the U.S. tech giant Palantir from public and private state-controlled companies. This one pulled in over 600 points.
This is a major geopolitical move. The Spanish government is instructing state-controlled entities, including their major telecom Telefonica and military shipbuilder Navantia, to halt future contracts with Palantir. The stated reason is growing concern over the potential misuse of classified national security information and a desire to protect Spanish national sovereignty.
The context here is key. Palantir's leadership, specifically Peter Thiel and Alex Karp, have deep political ties to the incoming U.S. administration, which apparently conflicts with Madrid's diplomatic positions. So Spain is accelerating funding for domestic tech platforms to keep their data sovereignty intact. France and Germany have been making similar moves away from Palantir recently.
But the Hacker News comments highlighted a massive irony here. A user named FODMAP pointed out that while Spain is blocking Palantir for security reasons, they are simultaneously storing all sorts of sensitive data, including traditional wiretaps, on Chinese servers.
Yes, that sparked a massive debate about the lesser of two evils. Is it better to hand your data to the US or to China? One commenter argued that China is not actively threatening to invade the EU, while another pointed out that China is supplying Russia. It really highlighted the helpless feeling a lot of European tech workers have right now. Europe is heavily dependent on foreign powers for its critical IT infrastructure.
It is the classic prisoner's dilemma of alliances. As one user pointed out, it is advantageous to depend on allies for efficiency, but when an ally becomes inconsistent, you have to decide when to endure the massive economic pain of building your own domestic tech. Spain is trying to do that now with a 115 million euro investment in a domestic firm, but building an alternative to Palantir from scratch is going to take a long time and a lot of money.
Shifting gears to the open web, our fourth story is about PeerTube, which got around 600 points. For those who do not know, PeerTube is a free, decentralized, and federated video platform developed by Framasoft. It uses ActivityPub to federate across instances, and it actually uses peer-to-peer WebRTC in the browser to share the streaming load among viewers.
It is an incredibly cool piece of technology, and the idea of a community-owned, ad-free alternative to YouTube is something the Hacker News crowd loves. But the top comment on this threat was a massive reality check from a professional YouTuber named Jero.
Right. Jero pointed out that people who do not make videos for a living severely underestimate how expensive it is to produce high-quality content. They have a channel with about 100,000 subscribers, and they said even a 20-minute video can easily take 40 hours of high-skilled labor. They argued that without YouTube's ad revenue model, which pays them $500 to $1,000 a video, they simply could not afford to make content.
Jero's point was that you cannot build a real competitor to YouTube without a way to pay creators big money, because hoping for $5 donations just doesn't scale for production teams. But other commenters pushed back, saying PeerTube doesn't need to replace MrBeast. It can just be a place for people to talk to a camera without worrying about the algorithm or getting demonetized for saying the wrong word.
A user named Infamia had a really smart take on the business side. They suggested that creators should use YouTube as a lead generation tool and then use PeerTube or their own hosted site as the premium distribution channel for true believers. That way, you own your distribution and are not entirely at the mercy of YouTube's algorithm changes. It is a dual strategy.
Yeah, it is like how some creators use Patreon now for uncensored or early access content. PeerTube might not kill YouTube, but it provides a vital lifeboat for the ecosystem. If YouTube ever shuts down a creator, having a federated backup where your audience can still find you is incredibly valuable.
Finally, our last story today is a fun, nostalgic one. Bring back crappy forums. This was an article from Tedium that got over 550 points. It looks back at the history of web forums, from Usenet to WWW Board to PHPBB, and asks what we lost when we moved to modern social media.
The author talks about how old forums barely worked, they would crash, they were full of spam, but the sense of community was spectacular. You actually got to know the other users. Modern social media like Twitter or Blue Sky might give you thousands of followers, but it often leaves you feeling hollow.
The Hacker News discussion on this was fantastic because HN itself is basically a highly evolved forum. A user named Dog in a Suit argued that the Reddit and HN style of comment trees is actually a clear improvement over old chronological forums because it makes it easier to track interesting back and forths.
But then Postal Coder replied with a brilliant counterpoint. They said the downside of the tree structure is that discussions have a shelf life of exactly one day. If a topic is brand new, the thread is flooded with people who do not know anything about it, and the most upvoted comments are just quick takes. In the old chronological forums, a thread about a new product could stay active for years as people actually bought it and returned to share their real experiences.
That is so true. I'm on a few classic car and hobby forums, and there are threads from 2006 that are still active today. You just can't do that on Reddit or Hacker News. Once it falls off the front page, the conversation is dead forever.
Someone even suggested that HTML should have native tags for discussions, where the user can choose whether they want to view it as a tree, flat, time-ordered, or ranked by votes. That would be the ultimate dream, combining the best of the old web with modern UI.
I love that idea. Maybe someone listening will build it, and we will be talking about it on the pod next week.
Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us on episode 445 of HN Pod.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories, comments, and insights from Hacker News. Have a great day, everyone.
See you tomorrow.